خدامو
Namaste and blessings, Sadgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai. Welcome to Meditative Living. This is Swami Shivananda Giri, your representative, bringing you the teachings, the blessings, and the Shakti of His Holiness, Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who in 2007 became the very first white-skinned American-born human being to be invited into the rank of the Mahamandaleshwars, the 80 human beings who oversee Sanatana Dharma, better known as Hinduism, on this particular planet. And he is the only Mahamandaleshwar living within the United States. Now, today, we rejoin the sharing of the Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri. Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri was the guru of the guru of this Swami's guru. And he was a very unique individual, what is called in Sanskrit an avadut. He didn't speak all that much at all. He was not the type of guru who sat down and gave hour-long discourses on theoretical topics and such. That was not his way. His way was far more direct, far more subtle, and far more accompanied by Shaktipat. Shaktipat, that term, refers to the descent of grace. Grace is not something you buy, not something you earn. It is something that is simply given. In a Shaktipat tradition or lineage as this Swami is in, we, the individuated forms and minds, become, well, first we clean out our own systems to the degree necessary to hold the Shaktipat that is given us. Then we develop to the point where we can be utilized by the divine to transmit that Shakti to others. And that's what this Swami does on behalf of the Mahamandaleshwar, who lives in Los Angeles. So for those he cannot get to, this Swami and other Swamis he has trained carry out the teachings, the blessings, and transmit the Shakti. The whole Shaktipat thing is a very curious, often misunderstood situation, but it is very, very real. Now, let us continue with the Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri. Oh, another little brief bit of history about this this book. Nityananda did not write anything. This came to be because a group of his disciples over a period of, I believe, 7 years, noted down when he would speak of things. And they noted these things down over a period of time, gathered them together, and presented them to one of his female disciples named Tulsi Amma. And she went to him with this collection of sayings and teachings and sought his permission to have it published. And he said, okay. And now it exists. It has been presented in many different ways through many different people with various commentaries in that. The one this Swami is reading from today comes from www.omjai.org. Now, let us continue with verse 203. Nityananda said, those who are indifferent to honor and dishonor enjoy bliss, true bliss, which is the same as Brahmananda, the at-one-ment with the Godhood. If we concentrate our intellectual powers for 5 minutes, we feel that bliss. Those who have not realized the primordial cause have not realized the goal of life. Like flies falling into the flame of a burning lamp, those who have not realized the truth are caught in the net of delusion. The flies repeatedly see the lamp. They repeatedly hover round the lamp, and at last they fall into it and die. Now the commentary. True bliss, Brahmananda, the at-one-ment with God, or in the Godhead or Godhood. Brahmananda means the bliss of the Creator. This bliss is only enjoyed by those who are perfectly indifferent to honor and dishonor. We can experience divine bliss in us if we concentrate our intellectual powers in the head for 5 minutes. When intelligence, the higher mind, buddhi, becomes one with knowledge, or jnana, we enjoy supreme bliss. Those who have not realized the primordial cause have not realized the goal of life. God is the primordial cause of creation. Without realizing Him, the goal of life cannot be reached. God is the primordial cause of all creation. God realization is the aim and end of life. Like flies falling into the flames of a burning lamp, those who have not realized the Atman are caught in the net of delusion. Such men and women are caught in the duality of the world. The flies repeatedly see the lamp. They repeatedly hover around the lamp and at last fall into it and die. Likewise, man sees the momentary nature of worldly pleasures before his very eyes. Yet he is immersed in it without realizing the truth within him. And he dies a miserable death. Verse 204, Nityananda said, those who have no pranayama have no yoga. Pranayama refers to the control of prana, energy, sometimes also referred to as breath only, but breath is a component and way in which prana is accessed and controlled. It's not breath alone, well, you know, what's going in and out of the lungs. It's not just that air. It is a more subtle energetic component. Back to the text. Nityananda said, it is impossible to draw water from a well without a rope. Those who are not free from bondage have no peace. No one can live without drinking water. Those who have annihilated mind are desireless. Babies are Raja Yogis till the sixth month. After the brain is developed, the same baby is a Hatha Yogi. The mind in such babies is very fickle because the discriminating power is less in them. Babies cannot distinguish between a lump of sugar and a lump of earth. Hence, such babies regard earth and sugar as exactly the same. The fruit is always at the top of a tree. Similarly, the fruit in man is upwards. If you sow a coconut in earth, coconuts are seen at the top of the coconut tree. For every tree, the fruit is at the top. The commentary. Those who do not practice pranayama or experience pranayama, the control and breath, have no yoga. Yoga means controlling the prana within yourself. Just as it is impossible to draw water from a well without a rope, so also it is impossible to draw up the Kundalini in man from the Muladhara at the basic level to the Sahasrara within the head. This cannot be done without control. Those who are not free from bondage have no peace. No one can live without drinking water. Likewise, no one can live without prana in him. When mind in man is annihilated, a man becomes perfectly desireless. It is the mind in man that is responsible to create desires in him. Babies, till they are 6 months old, are perfectly desireless. They know not themselves, and hence they are Raja Yogis then. When the brain is developed, they learn one thing after the other, and they then become Hatha Yogis, very involved with the body. The mind is very fickle in babies. When the brain is developed a little, Gyanis are like babies, because to Gyanis, a lump of earth and a lump of gold are the same. Just as fruit on a tree is at the top, so also in man, Jnana is at the top end of the Sushumna canal. Jnana is in an upward direction in the body, its seat being within the head. A coconut tree bears coconuts at the top, so also every other tree has its fruits in an upward direction. Jnana in man is an upward direction, its seat being the Sahasrara in the brain. Okay, I'll allow this Swami to unpack this for you a little bit. The Sahasrara is the crown chakra at the top of the skull, and what is being referred to here with all the talk of prana and kundalini and all of that is bringing that energy, that awareness, and that seat up to the Sahasrara, up to the top of the head, and keeping it there. Not just a short visit, not just a little experience and a thrill, but solid and stable there and then beyond. Verse 205. Nityananda said, "The umbrella does not hold the man. All is held by the mind. When the mental moods are destroyed, all differences disappear. Such a man has no desire. He is a sannyasi. He is a yogi. A man who has no mind has everything in himself. Just as in a steamship, there's all sorts of commodities, so also a man who has conquered the mind has the whole world in himself." The commentary. Just as it is the man that holds the umbrella and not the umbrella holding the man, so also it is the man that clings to Maya and not that Maya clings to man. Maya has no hands and feet to catch hold of a man. The mind in man becomes prey to Maya. When mind is destroyed, all differences disappear. When mind is destroyed, a man becomes perfectly desireless. A desireless man or woman is a sannyasi. He is, or she is, a yogi. A man or woman who has mind in control, or rather being controlled by their mind, wants everything. A man or woman with no mind does not want anything. Such a man or woman has the whole universe within themselves. They have in them supreme peace and become self-contented. Just as a steamship has in it all sorts of commodities, one who has conquered the mind has the whole world within themselves. Such a one has developed in himself that supreme power which governs the whole universe. Okay. Kindly allow this Swami to speak about this destroying of mind. Many might get a bit confused with that concept, but allow me to shine a bit of light on that. What is being referred to here is not losing your mind, becoming crazy, being a blank slate, nothing of that nature is what it. What is being referred to here is the externally focused and dualistically confused mental processes being reduced to zero. Being able to sit completely still, silent, no thought at all, no input of sensory content, no output of mental processing, no movement, nothing. Everything ceases. When one hits this state, referred to within the tradition this Swami represents, referred to as Nirvikalpa Samadhi. It is an experience that this Swami would refer to as missing time. Because the clock keeps ticking, but once you have come back to outer awareness, there is nothing for the mind to fill that time with. No content. You were not here. And you can't say where you were. But it is not sleep. These are very, very subtle states. And Nirvikalpa is stepping outside of the time-space continuum completely. And back into the seat of stillness and silence, from which all creation goes forth. So the objective in sadhana or spiritual practice is to reach this Nirvikalpa Samadhi repeatedly. Just because you've done it once doesn't mean you're done. You keep hitting it over and over and over and over. Until that becomes the rock upon which you sit. Understanding both the transcendent and the immanent, or the limited, the outer perspective, the individual unit of consciousness. For one who has become Jivanmukti, enlightened and liberated, this is their state all the time. And it doesn't change. And this is something of a great deal of speculation and claims by those who have not accomplished it. But a very simple and direct thing for those who have. It is the end of all mysteries. It is the closing of all paradoxes. This Swami likes to refer to it as the cosmic balancing act. Because in the beginning of our practice, we seek these higher states. And we want them very badly, and we imagine how they will be, and all of these things come to mind. But then once it's occurring, it's not a big deal. It's nothing to be impressed about. It's completely natural. It's not a problem of any kind. It becomes the very basis from which everything can be seen, understood correctly, and interacted with in a way that is of benefit to others. Let's move along to verse 206. Nityananda said, "When a boat is sailing, everything around appears to move. So also, when mind is disappearing, everything appears to whirl around. What is experienced in sleep is not experienced in the waking state. What is experienced in the waking state is not experienced in sleep. If you put a vessel without water over fire, no sound is produced. In order to produce sound, water is necessary. So also, those who have no subtle discrimination will not be benefited. If you are bitten by a cobra in sleep, you will not die. In sleep, mind is quiet. When there is mind, there is everything. What is called creation is a mental affectation. When there is thorough introspection, there is no creation." The commentary. "When the mind in man is slowly disappearing, everything he sees seems to whirl around. Then they perceive the one in everything. When the mind has been destroyed, all will be the one without a second. When a boat is sailing, everything around appears to move, but in reality, the boat itself is moving. Similarly, when mind in man is transformed, everything is transformed. What is experienced in sleep is not experienced in the waking state, and vice versa. So also, what is experienced when one is in communion with the Atman cannot be experienced when one is engrossed in worldly affairs of the mind, and vice versa. If a vessel, a cooking pot, without water is placed over fire, no sound is produced. Water is necessary to produce sound. Those who have no subtle discrimination cannot be much benefited by spiritual exercises. Subtle discrimination is absolutely necessary to realize the Atman directly and consciously. If you are bitten by a cobra in sleep, you will not die, because in sleep, mind is quiet. If the mind is destroyed, there will be no creation. What is called creation is a mental affectation. When the mind is merged in the Atman, all is the one. The creation will also be the one. Atman will be the all, and the all will be the Atman. Now, please understand, for those without familiarity with the term Atman, we can use Atman in place of the Western Christian type use of the word soul. That bit which inhabits us and which we work with, and it gain experiences, that Atman is seemingly separate from Brahman, from the source, from God, but this is a mental exercise. This perception of a separation is mental. And from the mental flows the physical. Sonic, let's go ahead and run the break song, and we will be back here in just a little bit with verse number 207 on meditative living. Namaste and blessings, whether you are listening live at this very moment or through the archives at type1radio.com. Thank you so very much for allowing this Swami to be of service. Let us continue with the Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri. The cat just crawled up on the keyboard. Okay. Verse 207. Nityananda said, in the beginning of practice, the neophyte should diminish sleep. When practicing moderation in diet, one should not bathe in cold water. If you bathe once in 4 or 5 hours in cold water, the blood circulation in the body will not be regular. An actor in a theater first acts behind the curtain, then he comes out. In the beginning, there must be secrecy. Afterwards, it is not necessary. If you pour water in a vessel which is already full, that water flows out. So also, when perfect peace is attained, it becomes known to all. Such a man has no desire. The peace is the supreme. Perfect peace means union with God. And keep in mind, stepping away from the text, keep in mind, the word yoga means union. That's the only meaning of it. In the West, we often think that yoga means doing stretches and postures. No. That is the physical portion of yoga. But it is not the goal. It is not something that will get you to the goal, even. It is a portion performed through and with the body so that one can become fully focused inward, upward, and outward on far more subtle things. It is very healthy for the body. It's great for that purpose. But the objective of yoga, of gaining this union with the divine, is to wipe off the body idea. Now, it still will persist. Yes. It still will exist. Yes. And requires care and maintenance and all those things. But you learn to not identify with it. You identify with that which is infinite and eternal. The body through which you interact in this world is then simply a vehicle, no different than your car is now. The commentary. In the beginning of practice, the neophyte should diminish sleep. When practicing moderation in diet, one should not bathe in cold water. If you bathe once in 4 or 5 hours in cold water, the circulation will not be regular. A neophyte should maintain secrecy in the beginning, just as an actor first acts behind the curtain and then comes out to star. So also, one must maintain secrecy in the beginning about one's inner dealings. In the beginning, there must be secrecy. Afterwards, it is not necessary. If one pours water in a vessel already full, that water then flows out. So also, when perfect peace is attained, it flows out to all. Supreme peace, when attained, transcends the domain of the body. When supreme peace is attained, one has no desire. Desireless peace is the supreme. It is of the first class. Perfect peace is the unity with God. There is no peace higher than this supreme peace. Kindly allow this, Swami, to bring up early on in our practices, many of us will have read a great deal and will have been impressed by the experiences of others who have walked the path and attained the goal. This can be helpful as inspiration, but it can be a bit harmful when we judge our own practice with these expectations in mind. That's not helpful. That individual who reported the experiences had the experiences necessary for them. Ours might be very different. It doesn't make them better, and it does not make them worse. And if we have already had certain experiences in prior incarnations, we have no need for them now. Getting towards the end of the path, the experiences are not important. Took this Swami a long time to get that point firm and not be as swayed about the experiences, the inner sights and sounds. I mean, some of them are wonderful. Some are damned scary. It's not all fun. And some of it is quite physically and mentally painful from time to time. But all of this process is what we must walk through to get back home. And each of us have our own path. And it need not be like anyone else's. There may be similarities, but the details will often be quite different. So if you are beginning your practice or in the first few years of your practice, please trust in the instruction you are receiving and don't judge yourself harshly or become overly impressed with yourself because of the varying experiences, because they will all come and go. And anything that can come and go is not the goal. The goal is unchanging. So anything that can change is part of the process, not the goal. Moving on. Verse 208. The form of God is peace. Om and peace are his forms. He is without form. He is without change. He is above discrimination. He is bliss absolute. Like the lulling of children to sleep in the cradle, we must sleep internally with the mind for the pillow. We must successfully pass each and every test. We cannot get employment unless we succeed in the tests. Knowing to speak English, but not knowing how to write, is not knowing English fully. The commentary. God is supreme peace. God is Omkar. Formless, changeless, transcending discrimination completely. God is absolute bliss. Like the lulling of children to sleep in the cradle, one must sleep internally, using the mind for one's pillow. The mind in man must become quiet. By destroying the mental modifications, or the vrittis, one attains the Atman. One cannot get employment unless one succeeds in the tests for which one has to appear. Knowing to speak English and not knowing how to write it is not knowing English fully. Similarly, mere talk about Vedanta or scripture is not realization of the Atman. We must directly and consciously within ourselves experience the bliss of the Atman. Verse 209. Nityananda said, "The throat place is the Muladhara, where the serpent power, Kundalini, is originated. The heart space is the place for throat place. The heart space is in the middle of the eyebrows. Swadhisthana is in the brain. Ajna is triangular. What is called Raja Yoga is above the neck. Ajna is the locality where man attains mukti. What is called this world is Jivatma. What is called the next world is Paramatma. The union of these two is the space of consciousness. Chit is the mental mood. Sat is the one indivisible." The commentary. What is called Raja Yoga, or the royal union, is above the neck. When the Kundalini in man rises above the neck through the Sushumna, the man concerned or woman steps into the domain of Raja Yoga. When the Kundalini is below the neck, we call such a Hatha Yogi. Just as there are the seven chakras in the body, beginning from the Muladhara at the base of the spine, to the thousand-petaled lotus, the Sahasrara, in the brain, so also in Raja Yoga, there are the seven which are all above the neck. The Muladhara in Raja Yoga is the throat place. Unlike the Muladhara in other philosophies, situated at the lower end of the spine in man. Hence, the throat place is the base from where the serpent power Kundalini is originated in Raja Yoga. The heart space is the real place for the throat. Kundalini must reach the heart space within the head from the throat place. The heart space is situated in the middle of the eyebrows, and it is called Brahmadya, the Svadhisthan. The third lotus of the body is the brain. What is called the Ajna, the sixth lotus, is triangular in form. Ajna is the space where man attains mukti, which means freedom. When the Kundalini in man reaches Ajna, the sixth chakra, a man experiences samadhi. The heart space is in the Ajna. What is called this world is the Jivatma, the limited perspective. And what is called the next world is Paramatma, beyond all limitation. The union of these two is in the space of consciousness, the Chittakasha. Chit, or knowledge, is the mental mood. Sat is the one indivisible. Chit and the Sat must be merged in the Atman, then mukti must be attained. Believe me, that Swami understands how confusing all of this can sound. But in going through the experiences and going through the process, witnessing what occurs, not directing what occurs, that's kind of the hard part, is the giving up of the directing from the individuated point of view, from the jivatma, from the limited. We think we know far more than we actually do. And oftentimes, we will be selfish from that point of view, which is entirely natural. It is often confusing, and that's completely normal, to be expected. That is the role of the Swami or the Guru, to assist others in dealing with this stuff. Especially here in the Western culture, where we have no box to put this kind of thing in. This isn't taught in our schools or in our Western churches. Yet, it's an entirely natural process in humans. Those who are in the time of the development of this will find their way to the correct guidance. It's always been this way. It'll always be this way. When the student is ready, the master appears. Not before. There's no point in it before. It's a waste of both of their time. There is a plan. It is carrying out. And whether you understand it or not is of little consequence. If you do, well, then you can just watch it play out and not be bothered about it. This doesn't mean you won't have occasional annoyances. That sort of thing, of course. But they'll be like clouds floating by in the sky. They don't become the entirety of your mental process and expression. Just last for a minute, whatever. Less than that. Things become quite simple. Things become blissful. And please don't get the term bliss confused with ecstatic. That's two different things. The ecstatic experiences come and go. You cannot maintain that shortened breath, increased heart rate of an ecstatic experience. That cannot be maintained long term. But contentment can be. Contentment is quiet. It draws no attention to itself. It's just there. You're just fine. You're just watching. You're observing everything. And you are even more subtle than that which observes. You are that. You just forgot because you had to forget in order to incarnate and play at your name here. That's how all of this works. You had to forget the one in order to become something other than the one for a time. Then you reach a point where you can pursue that one again. And then, when you are actually touching it, coming in contact with it, and becoming the same as it, or just somewhat like it, you remember. You recognize this. Because it's always been part of you. And you've never truly been away from it. It appeared to be like that for a while. And that's how all of life is. In every level, every dimension, every realm, every planet, every universe, for every body, no matter what the body be made of or shaped like. It's an experience. Namaste and blessings. We'll be back next week with verse 210. Thank you for allowing this Swami to be of service. Namaste and blessings. Om Namo Narayana.